Welcome to Productivity Mastery. Stoy here, a productivity and performance coach on a mission to help businesses and people get the most out of their time. On this podcast, I'll bring you exceptional performers and together unlock what it takes to perform at your highest level. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy this episode. Scott, how are you doing today, my brother?
Brilliant. Thank you, Stoyan, as ever. It's a pleasure to be with you, just spending our 45 minutes together. I've got my coffee.
There you go.
We've got plenty of chat. We've got lots to catch up on. And today is a fantastic day for me because I'm rebooting the boom. And we'll obviously talk about a little bit about that today and give people an understanding of that, share some energy. We've got some stuff to give to people at the end. But I'm feeling good. How are you feeling, more importantly?
Amazing, man. Amazing. I can see your coffee is still strong. You know, I
have
a little bit of milk in it.
Yours looks green on here. It's like a green tea or something.
No. This is just a lot of almond milk, but otherwise.
All right. No. This is a strong coffee.
The day is not over, huh? Congratulations
just for the beginning.
Or relaunching, and it's pretty amazing. And we're going to get there, but Scott the Boom. Scott, why don't you tell us what does that mean? You know, why Scott the Boom? Scott Morrison, Scott the Boom. What does that whole boom think?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, my company, for those who don't know, my company is called The Boom. And the reason that I called it The Boom, is because when I used to work at Diesel, my team always had this wonderful phrase that whenever anything was going really well and everything was going exactly how we liked it, we'd just walk into the room and I'd go, how's that thing going? And they just go, boom. And I'd go, great. I know the feeling was brilliant. You know, it was just like, it was, we've done it. It's nailed. You know, we've overachieved everything else. And that became that word, it's kind of part of culture really now. But it's just become that shortcut, that feeling, that knowing, that understanding of when everything is going how you want it to go and you're creating the kind of impact that you want to create in your head, in your heart, everything just goes boom. And I just thought to myself one day, that's what I'm all about, right? I'm all about how do you create that for people? How do you create that for yourself? How do you create that kind of energy? And so the name just naturally came to me. And You, Scott, somebody called me Scott the Boom. It's one of those weird things, right? It's not my nickname. I've always been Scott Morrison and blah, blah, blah. And then I think it was when we were at 15 Seconds a couple of years ago. And I can't remember if it might have been you, it might have been Stelly, it could have been anyone, any of the crew. And someone just called me Scott the Boom. Like, he's got the boom. It's Scott the Boom. And it just stuck. And I just thought, well, and that's what people know me as. One of the interesting things is I always say to people, whenever you create a brand, create around a feeling, because you want people to feel a certain way when they create the brand, and also be known and recognized for something. In a moment in time when people need something, you want to be the first thing that they call out. So I often hear people say to me, Scott, can you come in? We need some boom. Or I've been told people say, get the boom guy in. Get the guy, we need the boom. And so, you know, if you are someone's paracetamol at a moment when they've got a business headache or a personal headache, you can't ask for more than that. So I've just incorporated it into my name and that's it. That's the story.
Yeah, I got to say it's really catchy and I think most people can understand it without needing explanation. Like it's just a super simple one. It's like, oh, it's got the boom.
Yeah.
Actually, last week, Samantha... and I had a she was on the podcast and she mentioned that your book is her favorite book.
Oh, that's great. That's an honor.
Yeah, I mean, I actually haven't read it yet, so can't wait to do that. Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit, you know, we're going to get into the things, but just very shortly, I think you have a really interesting background, a little interesting story. By working in advertising, working with brands like Levi's, Diesel. So why don't you tell us about your story? How did you end up doing what you do today?
Yeah, cool. Many years ago now, I started in advertising. When I was at university, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be a journalist and I wanted to be a lawyer and all these different things. And one of the big ad agencies here, actually globally, Saatchi & Saatchi, came to my university one day, and they did this amazing talk. And I all I could see as I watched the talk and as the talk finished was me in that video in a year's time. And I was doggedly persistent. I made friends with the two people who, I mean, we didn't have social media back in the day, right? It was, I wrote letters and I phoned them, and when I went to London, I went to meet them. And anyway, at the end, I managed to get a graduate placement at Saatchi's, which was just a total dream come true. And in my first year there, I won Star of the Year as a kind of up and coming talent. And I was on the video that went to the universities that I'd been in the year before. So this idea, remember, we were talking about stating intent. I want to be in there. I want to be on that video. I said that to myself, and it drove me forward and got me a role at Saatchi's. And I stayed there. I had the most fantastic time. The culture is nothing is impossible. I had the most amazing time. We did some incredible stuff. And I was headhunted to go and run the Nike business at another agency called Wieden & Kennedy. And that was the only reason I was ever going to leave, was to run the Nike business. And I spent 2 years there and probably had one of my biggest ever learnings, which was I was told to come in and help shake up the agency. And I kind of walked in, right, I'm going to shake this place up. And I went about it all the wrong way. I came in with kind of big boots on and went, right, this is wrong, this is rubbish, this is, without even thinking for a minute about the culture of the agency that I was going into. So I just came in with a big sack of my culture. I went, right, wallop, this is how you do things. And they were like, this isn't how we do things. And it didn't work for me. It didn't work out for me. I ended up leaving there after a short period of time. And then thinking to myself, do I really want to stay in advertising? I had such a great time at Saatchi. I couldn't see that culture was going to be the same anywhere. So I decided to go client side. And I started at Levi's. I was marketing director at Levi's. That's my first role. Big job. I had to turn the business around, turn the culture around. We created a load of really interesting stuff that reconnects us back to for what I think is the heartland of that brand, the thing that needed to be done that nobody was doing. So we reconnected back to youth. We won some awards. Then I was asked to go to Activision and go and do the same for them. So computer games, pretty nerdy kind of thing, bedroom business at the time. We turned it into, you know, a blockbuster entertainment business, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, Guitar Hero, all these big games. We launched them at a scale that had never been seen before. And then my final role was at Diesel. I was marketing commercial director there, running the marketing and sales teams. And again, just, you know, incredible brands, you know, such pleasure to work in, such a joy to work in, and all had the kind of mindset that I love, you know, create positive disruption in everything that we do. You know, whether it's nothing is impossible, whether it's only the brave as the Diesel, you know, or for successful living or being pioneering spirit like at Levi's, all those things for me, you know, my big lesson for everyone, go where culturally your heart is, because the more you do that and you work in those cultures, you'll do magic, you'll create great things. So that's been my experience.
Tell me more about that. I think many people watching might be also curious to explore this. What does it mean, go where you culturally fit? And more, how do you discover what is the kind of culture that would fit you? Like somebody watching right now, and how should people explore what their values or behaviors and things that they stand for?
Well, let me make a distinction. So I don't think it's necessarily about trying to fit into a culture, okay? Because that's where I see a lot of issues right now, where businesses have and I find it myself, you know, trying to fit into an agency culture that I just didn't fit into. I didn't really understand. I think what you need to do is take a step back and start and say to yourself, say that the things that you don't want to work in. Right. So I knew, for instance, I didn't want to work actually in law or any of the cultures that would stifle my creativity. So automatically I cleared a whole load of things out. So I'm not going to work in those industries and those things. And then when you think about the cultures that you really thrive in, think about what fires you up, what gets you out of bed in the morning. What are the things that you're really excited about? What are the kind of people that you want to be around? What are the kind of projects that you want to work on? What, you know, where do you find your inspiration? And make sure that you really think through those things. And then you can start to say, okay, well, that feels like this kind of industry for me. And then within that industry, you start to look at, well, where are the places that I can work? Where are the brands that fit the kind of thing that I want to do? So for me, like Nothing Is Impossible was like the Pied Piper of, you know, of doing brilliant stuff. It's like, as long as it was great, there was no barrier, there was no limits. Whereas other agencies were far more, you know, it's belt and braces, and it's you wear a suit every day and you do this. and culturally it was just not where I wanted to be. But I think the key thing, so is you've got to learn to say no. You've got to learn to know what you don't want to do. That's as important, if not more important, than knowing what you do want to do. Because you know, quite often, if you don't think those things through, you end up in this middle ground where you go, oh, okay, I'll see what that's like. I'll just try that out. And then you hate it. And it can turn you off the whole thing rather than pulling out and going, well, it's actually just that bit of the culture that doesn't work for me, not the whole industry. And people I see, yeah, they experience this all the time. You know, they dip their toe into being an entrepreneur or something, and they go and work at a startup, and the culture's not what they want. And they go, well, that's it. I don't want to be in startups anymore. So, well, no. You know, if you want that, you've got to do the work. It's like anything, you've got to do the work. It's like if you in your relationships or your interview, anything, you've got to do the work to know what you need. If you just jump ship and jump into something with both feet, it can be very, very wrong.
Right. By the way, those of you watching, thanks for tuning in. Hope you guys have your coffee as we do here with Scott. And you know, make sure to post your comment, you know, question in the comments. And Scott is here for you guys. He has a crazy lot of experience and positive energy to share. So make sure to ask your question. Today we're going to talk about how to reshape the future using your own advice. So Scott, we've been together, I would say, virtually for the past 3-4 months, supporting each other super unexpectedly. Like, I mean, we know each other. And by the way, let's give a shout out to our friends from 15 Seconds.
Yeah, they got help together.
You know, a bunch of amazing people, you know, have a chance to connect. But yeah, Scott, how was this journey for you? What does that mean for you, reshaping the future using your own advice?
Well, I mean, to start with, I just want to say, just having this time together with you and actually over the last 3 to 4 months, firstly, has really helped and has helped kind of give a framework and a shape to the thinking. So I think the first thing is, you know, when everything happened and lockdown happened, it's very easy for everything just to get mushy. And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people who they didn't set boundaries for themselves. They didn't set a framework for themselves. So they've just fallen into almost like a jelly or a blancmange type state where they don't know where to go. And as the time goes on and as they start to think, oh, we're coming out of lockdown and we're not really, and nothing's the same, they're finding it really, really difficult. So I want to say thank you first and foremost. And it's been a privilege and it's been great working together and all the people that we've had in the mastermind group. And it's just been fascinating. And I think with that, in having those kind of conversations, so I think connecting and having conversations stimulates your mind to join dots in new and interesting ways. I always believe that everybody knows what they need to do for their business, right? You know, everybody knows deep down what they need to do. It's all about choice. And so if you commit to being small, then you'll be small, right? And you can't then complain that you're small if you commit to being small. If you want to commit to being medium or big or different, you've got to commit to it wholeheartedly and think about what it takes to get there. You can't say you want to be there and don't do anything about it. And one of the things that I realized last year, I did a lot of traveling last year. I went to Australia, New York, and all over the world. And I said to myself, I want the boom to be global. I don't want it just to be me based in the UK. I want to be a global business. And I had loads of ideas about online and virtual stuff and digital products and everything else, but I didn't commit to it. So I wanted to be big, but I was still thinking quite small in some ways. And actually, part of that was driven by the fact that my business was face-to-face and everything was going well and my business was growing. But I still hadn't committed to making that global step. And I think, you know, once lockdown happened and I started to realize, well, actually, I've got a load of global connections already. Like people like yourself, like Sam, you know, the group that we're in, that's global in its starting point. So the dots just started to join differently for me. And then one of the big things that I suddenly realized, like anybody realizes, is I work with global businesses all the time, and I take them through my operating system of Unblock, Unlock, Unleash, and it fuels everything that I do. And when I was sitting there in week one of lockdown, when I'd lost half my revenue for the year, I deliberately didn't do anything. I deliberately stopped and took a step back. And in doing so, I realized that if I just jumped straight into action, it would have been knee-jerk. It would have been short term. It would have been, I need to do this and I need to do that. And I wouldn't have actually sat and thought it through. But when I did sit and think it through, I just suddenly realized, why don't I apply my own operating system to my own business? And it's the same, like whenever you leave a business, like when I, CMO of Diesel, I knew how to build brands and do all this and manage all this and everything. Come to your own thing and you forget all the basics, everything that you know. Like a carpenter's cupboards are always broken, right? And I suddenly sat back and went, right, what do I need to unblock? What are the old behaviors, old thinking, small thinking that I'm holding on to? A lot of it was about like actually doing video and understanding how to do all that digital stuff is quite scary. And actually, I just really enjoy being face-to-face, all that. And it was like, that's legacy. It's really not as scary as you think. And if it is scary, then how do we unblock that fear? So then I wrote all that down, broke it all down. Then I went into unlocking inspiration, unlocking thinking, unlocking new ideas. And that's when I just opened up and spoke to people. And in having those conversations, some with Ellie, you know, from our group, and yourself and Sam and my coach and various other people, I suddenly realized that most of the stuff is just out there and everything is teachable and learnable and accessible like that. And basically now anything you need to do has a tool. So I was thinking to myself, oh, when you do the presentations, you know, to camera, you've got to film it. And so I learned how to film edit. I learned how to edit properly. And then I found an auto cue tool on my phone, which means I can have an auto cue whenever I present a long script. It's like, well, I didn't even know that existed. And so suddenly, you know, it's like archaeology, you know, when people are looking for dinosaur bones and they uncover a little bit of a leg and then they uncover the whole dinosaur. It was like, over time, you uncover the whole thing. And you go, that really wasn't hard. And so the unleash part, which is for me, like today is a big important part of the unleashing, is you've got to get to action. So I set myself a deadline of July the 14th for a number of reasons, but some of it because I'm speaking to lots of things today and just having a deadline focused me. And I worked hard, learning stuff, unlearning, relearning, creating things that are actionable, you know, taking all of my learnings and turning them into an actionable plan. And now, you know, it's out there. And when you I just think the power of using your own advice and your own knowledge and the things that you use with business means that not only do you stress test it for yourself and it's real and it works and you can prove whether it works or not. So I found opportunities to tweak it and make it better. But also what a case study, you know, to be able to tell your clients, you know, when you've pivoted your own business and changed your own business and your own outlook based on your own knowledge that you're sharing with them and they can see the difference and see the results. It's kind of like, okay, well, I mean, I don't like the phrase drinking your own Kool-Aid, but it is that thing, right? You have to eat your own dog food or whatever you want to say to show that you believe in the principles that you're happily sharing with others. And I'm sold on my own beliefs. It sounds really strange, but I'm sold on that operating system. It's so simple, but you know, however I break it down in all the things that I'm doing, it works. It absolutely works. And then all the reading and everything I've been doing, in essence, all those books and the advice and the things that I'm hearing all marry up to it. Partly that's probably because I'm sort of unconsciously, biasedly looking at those things. But also, you know, there's just truth in clearing your mind, getting all the stuff out that you need to unblock, finding inspiration and new ideas and new thinking and unleashing action is a simple 3-word operating system, but it fundamentally works and it makes a difference.
Yeah, it's super simple to remember and to relate to, I think. And I'm curious to explore a little bit further the first part, unblock. Is that can you give some examples of what could be something that's blocking someone to move on with the next stages? Do you think that the limitations are primarily, you know, the ones that we set for ourselves?
Yeah, well, I think that they are either limitations set by ourselves, so our own self-limiting beliefs, or indeed they're limitations that sit within a business. And sometimes, you know, there are mindsets, there are behaviors, there are processes, there are policies, there are products. There's all sorts of things that sit in a business that actually, when you really sit and think them through, and you say to yourself, actually, we want to get here. I want to be global, and yet we don't have any global products, or we don't have a We don't have any global thinking that we can share. I'm making this up, by the way. You suddenly go, well, there's a real blocker. We want to get here. We haven't got anything to get there. And then there's a blocker. We need to think about how we unblock that. So, of course, you just say, well, we need to create something global. And you get the inspiration through unlocking and unleashing your ideas. But, I mean, on a very, you know, on a personal kind of basis, you know, I run a lot of presentation. So one of my things, Boom the Room, which is about your presentation presence. And often when I'm speaking to people, you know, we work through what are the blockers to your presenting, and they'll be like, I'm just so scared. Okay, and I go, okay, well, what is it that you're scared about? And, you know, it will invariably boil down to, well, I'm scared, I just will look a fool in front of everybody. And when we talk a bit more about that and we unblock that, actually what it boils down to is they're scared that they don't know their content well enough that they can present it with confidence. And then that fuels all their fears that they're going to get called out. So you put it and go, okay, well, then really what we're trying to unblock here is your preparation. You're just not preparing. And then I say, well, how do you prepare? And they go, well, I just wing it. I write the slides the night before. I pull in the slides and I wing it. You go, well, is it any wonder that you're scared of presenting? You don't enjoy it because you're flying by the seat of your pants. You know, you wouldn't just get into a car and just drive it if you hadn't, check the tires and put petrol in it and everything else. You prepare for these things. And then once they get that, they go, oh, yeah. It's not about a fear of not enjoying it. It's about you just don't prepare well enough. You don't set yourself up for success. So as you unblock that, you then can unlock the new tools and techniques that will help them prepare. And then you say to right, unleash it. When's your next presentation? Here's the tool. Here's a canvas. Prepare your presentation how you need to present it and then action it. And it's the same when I scale that up to businesses. Businesses are full of self-limiting beliefs. Businesses are organisms just like humans. Just so happens there's lots of them. But, you know, when I work with businesses about unblocking how they want to scale or unblocking why their vision and values aren't working the way they need to be, it's always the same thing. You break it down, and then you find the puzzle. You go, there, that's what it is. That's why it's not working for you. And then we can really start to work with some. The danger, of course, is that we're so good at creating solutions for things. We quite often create solutions for these top line symptoms, the things that we think are going on. We create these things and then we half-heartedly put them into the business or put them into a little bit of something and then they don't work. And we go, well, why does that not work? Or I thought that was a really nice idea and the idea doesn't even get started. And if it doesn't work, more often than not, it doesn't work. It's because it's not solving for the thing that it needs to really solve for. It's solving for a little bit of a symptom somewhere. You know, like giving people fresh fruit is, you know, it's not going to solve the symptom that people are burning out. But we think it will because, people like having fresh fruit and nice flowers in reception. Talk to them and you find out they don't. They want to work less or, you know, they want more training or they want more time with the boss for steering their thinking. So we will solve for these things because it feels nice. The hard bit is getting to the unblocking and really doing the hard work to understand what am I really solving for? What are the real challenges and what's the real puzzle? I call them puzzles. I call this thing that we've got to solve the challenge. Break it into the puzzles that you need to solve and solve five or six of those puzzles. And then you'll really start to solve the challenge rather than half-heartedly coming out with one thing that's no good.
I love the puzzle metaphor because I can really relate to the fact like when you're solving a puzzle, you know what's the expected outcome. You know what's the objective. And I think that's probably one of the beautiful things of the simplicity of this framework is, you know, you got to start with the clarity. You say like, hey, here's the objective or here's the goal. Let's solve the puzzle. How do we get there? But you have to get clear. What's this objective? And why am I aligned and connected to exactly this goal, this objective, as opposed to everything else, right?
Exactly. And it's just like anything, right? Anything in life. We've all grown up in this kind of, I often talk about this idea of Uber's children, which is this customer expectations have just gone absolutely haywire since the invention of the smartphone. Right? And so we're all Uber's children. We just want a seamless life, you know, because if I can get a taxi, take me anywhere, and I just have to tap it into my phone and I'm at the other side of London in minutes. That's just, why can't everything be so seamless in my life, right? And that's good in some ways, right? I love seamlessness and taking friction out of people's lives is great. But the byproduct, the bad byproduct of that is that people just think that everything, you don't have to work hard to get anything anymore. Look at the YouTubers and look at the Instagrammers. And even those people are working really hard to do things. But we're in this sense of, I don't really have to think through anything. I just have to do loads of stuff. And the more stuff that I do, the more I'll find my way. There's an element of truth in that. But the hard work comes from thinking through, what do I need to solve? What do I need to create? What am I aiming for? And then do the work to do it. But we just end up this kind of, fail fast culture. This kind of like, well, it doesn't matter if I fail. Well, it kind of does if you're not getting anywhere, right? So if you're not thinking about where am I aiming for, and then learning actually is the thing I talk about, not a fail fast culture, a learn fast culture. If you're constantly learning, things won't work. That's great. Things will work. But you're heading towards that ultimate goal. If you're just out there going, well, I'm just going to try this, I'm just going to try that, and you're not trying for any reason other than you can, that's where we have the problem. So this idea of really applying rigor, and I love it actually, Natalie Nixon's book, when she talks about, you know, this logic and magic, the rigor behind creativity and the rigor behind thinking. Great creativity, isn't it? People don't just sit there and go, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Great creativity comes from boundaries, restrictions and constraints and rigor. And it's only when you squeeze it right down into this thing, then creativity comes out. People don't just sit there and go, oh, I'm amazing. You know, songwriters spend days in a studio listening to the same beat until it's ingrained, and then they go, that's, I've got it. They don't just sit there and play the guitar and they've got a number one hit. So anyone who believes any of that stuff is, I mean, I'm an avid photographer. One of the biggest things I ever learned when I went on my photography course to learn how to do photography properly was, I was amazed. The guy was like, right, you're going to take 100 shots. I was like, what? I'm like, don't you just take one shot? And then if it's the right one. Everyone just thinks you take the one shot and that's it. It's like, you take 100 shots and you might have five that might be any good. Then you take another 100 and you adjust the light and you adjust the composition and you do it quickly. And then you have to file them all in the right way. And then you have to go through them until you get the right shot. And then you have to retouch it. And people just think it's like, oh, I've got my one shot and I'm out of here. And just that, the art and the craft that goes into thinking is, you know, what we've forgotten, you know, and we need it. We need it.
Preparation, man. You said it really well. When you set the intention, I mean, you know, this beautiful metaphor that Natalie Nixon is using. By the way, for those of you listening or watching, the book is called The Creativity Leap by Natalie Nixon, and you can go and find the episode with Natalie. I had an episode with Natalie just a few weeks ago. Go check it out. Great stuff there. But it's this beautiful balance in between wonder and rigor, right? And I personally, I'm coming from the movie industry. So as a movie producer, it was the same fascination for me to understand, hey, it's not like you just put the camera, you know, it works from the first time. Sometimes you have to take like 20, 25 takes.
Yeah.
And it's only getting better and better and better, man. Because
you're
very clear what you're after. Like you have a clear picture with the storyboards, with the lighting, with all the team meetings that you've done before, and to try to master it so it fits with everything else. But then you go on set and it's different, man. And your camera rolling, you know, cut. Okay, the focus is not there. So you just all the details, all the things. But it's this, like, if you don't have structure, it's so hard to be creative. If you don't have the intention, if you don't have the frames, you know, how can you make a mess when everything is a mess already?
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. But anyway.
I mean, I often talk about, you know, at a very basic level, and we talked about it at the beginning a little bit, and I was talking about culture, what, you know, how do you make decisions? If you don't have filters or checklists, or, you know, you can't discern what's good and what's not good for you and what you're trying to do, then you will not get very far at all very quickly. You know, you might end up getting where you might get to. And it's very easy these days, you know, to run off into things. And we're told so often that, yeah, just go and do the thing you love and the passion, and we don't think about it. And then 6 months later, people are broke, or, you know, they've given up on that thing because it's not what they... The hard bit is always sitting and thinking, and doing the long, hard hours of thinking. Because once you've thought it through, and it makes sense, action is creating the unlocking the inspiration, because you know exactly where you're going to look. I'm gonna read that guy's book. I'm gonna watch this woman on YouTube. I'm gonna steal a load of ideas from here. I'm gonna put those together, and I'm gonna create this thing. But until you know that, you're just pulling things out of the bag in the dark, and it ain't good,
I when I was second grade, I used to play football for the American Friends soccer, right? And I still remember only one thing from my coach, but it was he would come and he would say, the best way to improvise is to prepare for it.
Yeah.
And what he wanted to say with that is, you do this shot over and over and over and over and over again, and when the important match comes, your body improvises naturally because you've been prepared for it. You've been executing so many times that it's now you can improvise because you're prepared.
It's so brilliant. And they'll talk about in professional football, they'll talk about muscle memory. Because a lot of the time what you're doing is you're just creating the muscle memory. And you're doing all these crazy exercises that you think, why am I doing this? And then all of a sudden the ball will come over your head from nowhere, and you'll put your leg almost behind your head and use your heel to kick a goal. You're like, how on earth did I do that? And it's because you practiced and practiced that movement time and time again. And when it's right, it hits. And that's the difference, right? And it's the same for anything. Practicing thinking, practicing presentation. Practice decision making, practice whatever, creating videos, whatever it is. The more you practice it, the better you get. But practice with an aim in view. Practice. Say, I want to present in front of 100 people in 6 months, and then practice. Do it. Get your ending goal. Do it. Then go, I want to present in front of 1,000 people in a year. Practice. Do it, and it will happen. You just have to keep thinking through. Have a goal in mind. And then know what work you need to do to get there.
Yeah, I love that, man. I wonder if this same thing can be applied to businesses, because I think often, we speak about sports, we speak about some other areas, and in many ways you have to exercise. If you're a professional football player, you have to exercise. But do we have to mandatory exercise as a business person, right? Like that's something that's I'm curious to also explore with you. Like, do you believe businesses should have more mandatory, in a way, exercise to kind of sharpen their minds and to sharpen their decision making and so on and so forth?
I think it's critical. It's absolutely critical. And I'm a great example. So I've been working with a media business, global media business, for over 12 months now. One of my biggest and favorite clients. They're absolutely brilliant. And before lockdown, we've been talking and working on a project about how do we enable the whole business to work effectively outside, work remotely, let's just say, so everyone doesn't have to be in the office, and what does it take and what do they need to do? And believe me, it was a real undertaking, and the team that put it together had done so much hard work to sell it into the business, to get people thinking about it, to create sessions with people in the business to help them understand the opportunity, and giving the business permission to say, how do you want to work differently? How do you want to do it? Massively brave move, right? This is a big business, a massive business, doing really well, shareholders. But to be able to say to all your team, how do you want to work? What do you need from us to really work really well? It felt really, we thought we were doing something completely unique and brilliant. And then, of course, lockdown happened. And, the movement in the business was just incredible, because had they not been doing that work 3-5 months ago before lockdown, then they would have completely stalled. It would have been a complete and utter, not a nightmare, because they'd have made it happen. But the fact was, it was a seamless move. It's like the ball coming over their head, and they as lockdown happened, they just needed to backheel it into the goal, because they'd already been thinking about how do we get ahead of what might be happening, what might be coming. How do we get our organisation geared up for something different, something new? They sensed this kind of change was happening. And I think all the businesses that are doing really, really well anyway, on my curve that I often talk about, at the very top, you know, customer expectations growing exponentially, right? And it's never going to go back to what it was. Businesses that are thinking about that all the time, how can we create service? How can we be of service for our customers? Not how can we sell them more stuff? How can we take more money off them? How can we add and create value for their lives? Those are the businesses that are constantly exercising what it means to be a brand, what it means to be a business, because they're thinking, literally thinking on their feet. How can we help our customers? How can we add value? How can we be of service? And there's so many businesses that get that so wrong. You know, they're just forced selling things onto people. They sell things and then they have bad customer service, you know, and the amount of bad customer service happened on my broadband, I won't name any, but on the last 3 to 6 months, you can't get through to anyone. They tell me everything's all right when it's not. It's costing people money and business, and they don't want to do anything about it. Now, that's just not good. But they haven't, they've got this very rigid, we just do it like this. They're not flexing their money. They're not thinking, well, what happens if this happens? What do we need to do? And if it doesn't work, how do we help our customers? And if they don't get what they need, how can we give them something else? They're not thinking like that. And of course, those businesses that don't do that will fall off a cliff. We know. So I think all businesses need to be exercising different strategies, using diverse thinking in their organizations, diverse minds, consumer insight, information, to always think heresy questions. What happens if? Talk about the things that we know that there are questions that need answering, but nobody wants to answer them. Get talking about that stuff, because that's the kind of stuff that will exercise you and get you fit for improvising. Because you think that this is, this pandemic is one thing, right? But, you know, William Gibson's written a great book. And in the book, he talks about the apocalypse not being this one overnight thing that we all think about, but being, it's called the jackpot in the book. I can't remember the book. Oh, the peripheral. It's called the peripheral. He says the jackpot is a 20-year event, but basically society and everything breaks down through floods, fires, geopolitical issue, i.e. what's happening right now. Right? So if you think that we're in the midst of an apocalypse and it's only going to get worse, if you think you can just do business as usual all the time and you can be inflexible and not change, not improvise and not practice and not think differently, forget it. Because the pandemic is one thing. There'll be something else. You know, the next thing will be an economic issue. The next thing will be people are going to move out of cities. You know, why do you want to live in a city if you don't have to work in a city anymore? You can live in the countryside and do your business. What's going to happen to the city infrastructure? What's going to happen to transport? So if you're not thinking, well, what happens if this happens? Forget it. You forget about it.
You know, I'm just finishing, as you know, my first book.
Yeah.
Which is about performance and culture, and specifically in startups, but also in, you know, the same things are applied in bigger companies. I'm actually really curious to hear from you. What would be the first three features that come to mind? You've been working with many leading brands. What are the first three features of the boom culture, so to say, like, you know, culture where all these things that you just described are happening, and it's easy for these things to happen, like productive culture, healthy culture, where change is possible.
Well, I think the first underpinning is that it's a learning culture. So everybody in the organization is geared up to understand, whether you're the CEO or the person in the post room, that you don't have all the answers, okay? And the only way to get the answers is to constantly be learning, unlearning and relearning. And that can come from anywhere in the organization. And when we don't know something, we test and learn quickly. We learn if it's successful, great, we do more of it. If it's not successful, great, we don't do any more of it. But that's the underpinning bottom layer. And then I think, on top of that is just a, I listened to a wonderful speech the other day, and the person who gave, I can't remember the name, it's really bad, I'm really bad with names, but what they talked about was part of the reason that businesses are so slow is just simply because there's so many rules and regulations and processes and things that actually really aren't fit for purpose. So for me, in an organization, you kind of have direction in an organization, but you treat direction as a hypothesis. It's like, we're gonna run the organization like this, as few layers as possible, but we might not have it right. So, this is our hypothesis and we'll keep testing. So you've got a really kind of structure that just allows people to do what needs to be done. Mike Kasparov is one of my kind of leadership heroes. He ran a ship in the US Navy that was the worst ship in the US Navy, and he turned it around to be the best. And all he did is he went around the ship and said, "What's your name?" They told him his name. And he said, "What's the one thing you would do to make everything better in your role?" And then everybody in the ship, 1,000 people, told him the one thing they'd do. And he said, "Right, do it." The cumulative effect of empowering all those people to do those things. Obviously, the ship's now the best ship in the US. I think it's called the USS Benfold is the name of the ship. Best ship in the US Navy. Because they just knew, you've just got to give people, get people to do the things. They know what needs to be done. Allow them, understand what they need to do, make sure it ladders up to what you need to have to the business and get them on with it. So that'd be my second thing. I think my third thing would just be, just this constant passion to just unlock. So if we're thinking really about unblocking and unleashing a little bit in those other two, but just the idea of just unlocking, constantly being inspired and curious and looking outside of the organization. Now, I've worked with some wonderful businesses, and I find myself, you get so drawn into the power of the organization, the brilliance of the organization, that actually, frankly, you become very insular. You just look at, you think what you're doing is brilliant. As you look, you forget to look outside and go, actually, what we're doing isn't brilliant, really. It's kind of good, it's cool, but it's not, this is cool. I always found that the moments that I lifted my head up and I went out and I met people or I saw things or I got curious and inspired myself were the moments of real magic, really opened my mind, really helped me think differently. So this sense of curiosity in a business, always looking to be inspired and think of ideas and have the pipeline of thinking that's rooted in really understanding what we need to be doing. But there's always a pipeline of what next, what now, what's a heresy question, what's... So just that open-minded thinking and curiosity with diverse mindsets is powerful. Does that help? So learning culture, a really kind of empowered ability. So direction as hypothesis, and then this curiosity layer. I think they're the things that really power up.
So those of you watching or listening, did that help you guys? Let us know what is one thing that really inspired you.
I'll be very curious to find out.
Yeah, talking about curiosity, I'm curious about, Scott the Boom, when people see you on camera, people see you on these speeches, we're having this life right now, you have this boom energy, full of passion, full of energy. In a way, people even probably think, this guy's always happy, this guy's always like in the right space. Because I mean, you're a happy guy, but I'm curious to explore a little bit the other side of the things. Like, what do you do when you're feeling overwhelmed or you're feeling exhausted and not in the right mental state, but you still have a lot of things to handle?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the only way to answer that, in all honesty, is to say stop. Is to stop. This is the thing that I've learned, in some ways, the hard way. I mean, I've burnt out before in my career, and I when I was at Saatchi's, I had a really, really tough time with burning out and mental health issues, and so I'm really aware of them all the time. And part of I've had depression on and off for years, and whilst I know if it's happening and it's coming on, thankfully it's under control pretty much most of the time, but I know what triggers things, I know what happens in the mind. So on one hand, I think it's one of the most powerful things that drives me forward, but at the same time, I know it can tip into a slightly difficult place if it's not carefully managed. And I'm not thinking about it. And so if you know, I mean, a massive moment of overwhelm for me came at the start of this lockdown. You know, one minute I literally had deals on the table that I was just finalizing. I was about to get on the tube to go and have my meetings and sign things off. And I was saying to my wife, it's going to be about a year. I'm really excited. And the news came on and the Prime Minister came on and said, you know, we're going to lock down. And I kid you not, I was on another call earlier with some people. We were talking about this. Somebody called it his dark Wednesday, where the phone just didn't stop ringing. So that's probably about the same day as I'm, but phone didn't stop ringing with, I'm really sorry, Scott, but, you know, totally understandable, by the way. And my clients they have bigger things to worry about than I have. You know, they've got thousands of people in their workforce in many cases, but it was huge. All of a sudden I was about to go off and do what I was going to do. And then the next minute I lost 50% of the revenue that I'd driven last year in the space of 2 days. And like I said, you know, at that moment you can go into overdrive and go, right, I've got to get, you know, the power of busyness, B-U-S-Y-N-E-S-S. But busyness is the new stupid as far as I'm concerned as well, right? It's like you can just do all this stuff, run around, not have any clear thought, overwhelm yourself with all this stuff. Look, read the news. Okay, I just switched everything off. And I just stopped. And I just stopped for a week, 2 weeks, I think, even. And I just let everything settle. It's like, you know, a river. You know, you want rivers of thinking and rivers of thought. And it's usually because everything's stirring up. The river's kind of flowing at speed and everything's dirty and everything's flying up, all the silt from the bottom, and everything's whirring around your head. And that creates overwhelm. And if you stop and let the water be still, you see clarity. You see the clear, you see the bottom, you see the depth, you see the opportunity, you see where the fish are, all those kind of things. And so I just stopped. And I do that now at moments when there's a lot going on. There's potential overwhelm. Or, you know, particularly like after today, I mean, I'm doing three of these kind of things and launching website and checking everything. And I've been working long hours. Tonight, I stopped. You know, and it's just family time, and I'm slowing down this week for a bit, and I'll have three days where I just chill down. Because in the old days, I'd just carry on going, and it's just not good for you. It really, it's certainly not good for me. But I actually genuinely think, you know, in all my experience now, the need to fill a hole of I need to do this, I need to achieve, I need to succeed, I need to, again, I go back to. Well, that's great. Like, my vision is, you know, I want to succeed. I want this business to look like I want it to look in 18 months, 2 years. But I ain't going to get there by working 14, 18-hour days. I'll get there by focusing really powerfully on what I need to do and maybe working 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, but connecting with the right people, speaking with the right people, doing the deep work that needs to be done, and then delivering that. And I think that's the... I just offer that advice to everybody, is sometimes just take a look at what it is that you're doing and work out, is this real, or am I just doing this because I'm trying to fill that hole that I am doing something? Waste some time. You know, nothing wrong with wasting a bit of time. Nothing wrong with watching a film. Nothing wrong with listening to a podcast halfway through the day. There's nothing wrong with having an hour's kip. There's nothing wrong with sitting with your family and having a meal. All of it, just let your brain slow down and digest things, and then you'll come back with powerful, impactful thinking.
I love it, Scott, and that's a great way to wrap up this conversation. I do not want to finish this conversation, but I have to. So, Scott, thank you so much for being here with me today, with the people who are watching and listening to the podcast afterwards. Where can people find you, learn more about the Boom? Decide to bring you in their companies.
Yeah, go to my website. Now, my website is now supercharged, ready for action. You can find everything you need on there, www.unleashtheboom.com. And in fact, I've got a gift for everybody who's listening, as exclusive for Stoyan's crew, all you out there. If you go to the website /Stoyan, you get that on there. The challenge canvas is on there that I created It will help you think about really meaningfully the things that you need to do right now to move your business forward, help you get through the clutter, help you get some clarity, work your way through it. There's an example in there and there's instructions. Download it and then tell me how it's helped you think about the challenges that you need to fulfill in order to make your business move forward.
You heard the guy, guys. unleashtheboom.com/Stoyan. Go check this free resource. It's going to be really helpful. I'm going to do it just tonight.
You do it.
Hey, guys, go follow Scott the Boom. You can also find him on Instagram. He's very Scott Morrison. That's the official. Scott Morrison, Scott the Boom. Check him out. A lot of positive, empowering, insightful content. Follow the guy. His book, Creative Superpowers. You can find it anywhere.
It's on the website.
So, please let us know in the comments if you watched it, if you listened to the podcast, what is one thing that really stood out for you from this conversation? What is one thing that you're going to take action on? So, with that being said, thank you so much, everybody, for being with us, and see you next time.
Thank you guys for listening, and if you're looking for somebody to help you step up your team performance and boost your productivity, make sure to check out stoyanyankov.com for online workshop solutions and programs designed to help you go through the current situation in a smoother manner. Stay safe and keep moving forward.